Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us on this Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or whenever you happen to be listening to this. It just goes up every Monday at 6 a.m. Joining me, as they always do, to help recap the weekend that was and look ahead to the weekend or the week that will be, Andy Mitz.
It's good to be back.
Succinct and accurate. Very good, Andy. And Jamie Steyer.
I don't have enough brain cells available to say anything more than that, so I'll concur.
And yet you just said a whole bunch more. Way to go.
Well, they're just those three brain cells are firing on all cylinders today.
Andy, we gotta take it a little bit easy on Jamie today. You and I will just we'll just throw the blows at each other. It's okay, fine. Okay. And tell you what, we can throw a little bit at our guest today. We do have a guest joining us here to kick things off on the pod, Brian Ralph of Heat Check College Basketball. Our good friend Brian, who joins us many times, especially right in the heart of college basketball season. Brian, welcome back to the 10-12, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we don't normally have guests on Mondays, but we're getting to the point in the college basketball season where it's time to have some conversations that I wanted to bring in someone smarter than Andy and I and Jamie. Well, maybe not Jamie, but Andy and I. Sorry, Andy. To figure some things out. And I want to start with this. We're going to kind of go over some of the Big 12 teams' resumes. Now, I put together a nice Google spreadsheet, which you can find links to on our Twitter account at 1012 Podcast TEN, the number 12 word podcast, where I actually broke down everyone's quad 1, 2, 3, and 4 wins and losses. So you can actually review the resumes because the net rankings are helpful. NCAA's net ranking site is helpful, but actually being able to see how things break down was really interesting to me. Because, you know, not all quad 3 or 4 wins or losses are created equal. So, Brian, the first thing I wanted to ask you about is just kind of a general question about the net. Now, I know this is just year 3 of this new ranking that has replaced the RPI, which everyone knew the RPI. And I'm curious. It confuses me a little bit. Because I think my problem that I've come to the point of is when you look at resumes, it's hard to figure out what matters most or what's weighted the most. Okay, because I'm going to take two blind resumes and just throw them at you that make me go, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. So let's take a resume that is a team. They are 7-4 in quad 1, 1-1 in quad 2. So they are combined. I hear this all the time. I always hear things combined. I hear quad 1 and 2 combined and 3 and 4 combined. So they're 8-5 in quad 1 and 2, and they're 8-1 in quad 3 and 4. They have a quad 3 loss. They're ranked in the high 30s. Their overall record is 16-6. And then I go and I see a resume of a team that's 18-4. That's a better overall record. They're 0-3 in quad 1, 6-1 in quad 2, which is still 6-4 combined, and 12-0 in quad 3 and 4. And I get that those are similar, but one is 18th, one is upper 30s. And I guess my thing is, I don't understand that, and I could keep throwing these at you left, right, mm-hmm. sideways of, I guess I don't understand how things are weighted. What does a quad one win mean? Why do teams who have mediocre at best records, but have played a ton of quad one games seem to get more credit even though they don't win any of them? Is there an understanding of how things are weighted and what matters most?
So there are layers to the net. And it's something that even at the specific levels is still not something that's easy to get. And so there's, you know, if you go into the deep, dark web circles of college basketball Twitter, you can find some conspiracy theories about the net not being a real thing. But a team's net ranking in particular, there are a number of factors that play into it in terms of developing what a team's ranking is, whether they're 20th, 18th, where they fall in that range. There's what's called a team value index, which is the NCAA's own evaluation tool. A team's net efficiency, their winning percentage, and then their adjusted winning percentage. That's an analytic portion in that. They put all those factors together, and out pops your net ranking. And where we get into the quad one, quad two, quad three is games played between teams and their net rankings. So if I'm playing the team that's ranked number 15 in net, that's a quad one game. If I'm playing a team that's, you know, 40th and that's at home, that's quad two, but if that's on the road, that's quad one. So to try and rate the quad tiers to reward teams for going on the road because they know in normal years, at least when there's crowds and everything, that's a much harder thing to do. So the net ranking and then the quadrant records are separate in a sense. So that's why you can have a team who is ranked, let's say, top 20, top 30 in net that doesn't have a quad one victory, just because they haven't beaten any of those teams with the net rankings that fall into the quad one tier, but their winning percentage, efficiency margin, anything like that is enough to have them ranked as a top 20 or top 30 team.
So the thing with when we get to Selection Sunday back in the day when it was, you know, the RPI of old, it always felt like the RPI was really a major part in the deciding, in the decision-making process. It really felt like RPI played heavily along with eye test into how the committee decided to put what teams in and leave what teams out. Now, look, we've only been able to have the net ranking work for one Selection Sunday. Obviously, Selection Sunday was canceled last year, so we didn't know how it would work. So there's not a lot of data to go off of here. But what do you get the sense of, how much does the net matter compared to how much the RPI mattered back in the day?
So the net was designed to replace the RPI, and it's now the selection committee's main sorting tool. So essentially, your net ranking is what the committee would look at with the old RPI. It's basically one for one in terms of what they want you to think. But the added portion of the different quad tiers then provides more data points or extra lines on your resume, so to speak, to help break down teams, in theory at least, teams that are more deserving versus teams that are less deserving. It creates not only a one-for-one swap, but gives you that extra added element as well.
Yeah, so that's interesting to me. And I'm going to use them as an example just because of what their resume is. And this is not a shot at Colgate. I'm very excited for Colgate. I think it's neat. I want them to make the tournament. I love really good mid-major and small school programs. So they're 10th in the net right now, right? They haven't played a quad one. They're 2-0 in quad two. Of their 11-1 record, they're 9-1 in quad three and four. I'm sure their efficiency is good. My guess is if I went and looked at what they have done, they've probably won most of their games handily. But it's interesting to me that, and I'm glad they're being rewarded for being 11-1. 10 seems high compared to a team that's won, let's say, Arkansas, who's 19th, who's 6-4 in quad one, 4-1 in quad two. Like, majority of their games have been against far superior opponents, and they have won. And they're 10-5 in quad one and two combined. I know they're 19-5 overall, but it's interesting to me that there's a 9-place gap. And maybe that's not, 9 seems like a lot to me. And maybe it's not. Maybe because there's 300-something teams, the difference between 10 and 19 is really marginal. But it's interesting to me that this is supposed to kind of be the new RPI. It just seems so off. And I don't feel like we should reward teams for more difficult schedules necessarily, but that's pretty drastic to me.
It is. And there are a few teams like this that the net has really worked in favor of because of the difference in schedules. With Colgate, for instance, didn't play a non-conference schedule. That would have drastically affected the net ranking. So basically what it's reflecting is that they have been more dominant against their conference teams than you would expect. And Colgate is a good team, but they're not the 10th best team in the country. Arkansas would be favored to beat them probably by double-digit points. And that's not a knock on Colgate or the net, but that's just, it's one of those things that in all the wonkiness this year, some of these analytics are going to be skewed in favor of some of these teams that have really dominated lesser competition. Loyola Chicago is another one. I think they're up at 11 or 12, and they have the nation's best defense. They lead the nation in defensive efficiency, according to KenPom. So that obviously works in their favor, but they're another team that doesn't have any of these or many of these top tier wins. They're a good team, and I think we know they're a good team because they have played much better competition than Colgate has. And Colgate's not going to get not like having the number 10 ranking, normally indicative of a team that's pretty good at the very least. Colgate's not going to get that large bid if they don't get their conference's auto bid just because they have a top 10 net ranking. There is some grain of salt there, and it's another reason why those quadrant resumes are in place as well, because they don't have a quad one victory. I think they may have one quad two victory, but that's about it. But it's just reflective of a year where there isn't a common baseline to go off of, and Colgate is benefiting from playing and dominating a weaker schedule.
Yeah, I'm curious with COVID year. We had it year one. The net didn't matter because we didn't have a Selection Sunday in year two. Year three has weird schedules, smaller non-conference schedules, or in the case of Colgate, no non-conference schedules. We're going to go into year four, it feels like, when you should have a pretty good grasp on how things work. And it's going to, I get the feeling next year, we're still going to have a weird feeling about the net because it's going to be maybe the first time since year one that we've really maybe had things normal and be able to put together data that's actually usable.
So, yes, and I do think there is wonkiness this year, but there will be wonkiness with the RPI or any other analytic system. It's just part of the byproduct of this season. Last year, while we didn't get to use it on Selection Sunday, the rankings did look pretty good. Like, there wasn't any craziness going on at the time the season was canceled. And I do think it has, at least those first 2 years, has been a better representation of who's actually good and who's not. And it is supposed to be a predictive tool. So it's not something that's ranking resumes. It's ranking all your efficiencies and different things to help project how good they think you're going to be if you were to play in your next game, so to speak. So there are always, Wisconsin, I think, is still top 15, even though they've really struggled over the last month and a half or so. They have just played good teams, so those losses don't necessarily count against them the way they normally would. But I do think as we get more data points, they'll tweak it. They tweaked the net before this season, adding some things, dropping a couple of metrics, and they'll continue to do so if there are wonky things. But I do think the things we've seen this year, like the Colgate thing, is just a matter of the COVID craziness and scheduling.
Fair enough. All right, so I want to look at some Big 12 resumes. We've got a week left in the regular season, getting as many of the makeup games as we can. You know, Kansas is done outside of a non-conference game against UTEP just to keep themselves from getting rusty. But it's pretty much everybody else has a non-conference game or has another conference game or two to play this week. So it's not set in stone yet. But I do think we can kind of look at resumes and see where teams stand. I want to go first to, and Andy, I'm going to let you kind of hop in here with if you're interested in one in particular. I'm going to go to one where maybe the perception of the team is better than I think their resume actually is, and that's Texas Tech. And I don't mean this is not a Texas Tech, but when you look at their resume, they've got 5 quad one wins, which is good, 7 quad one losses, which isn't the end of the world. They're 0-1 in quad two, and all their other wins come in quads 3 and 4. And like we kind of teased, quad 3 and 4 is pretty broad. For a home quad 3, it's anywhere between ranking 76 and 160. Anything 161 or more is quad 4 at home. Anything 241 or more is a quad 4 away. So you can play a significantly worse team. You can play team number 240 in the net on the road, and it's a quad 3. So I am, there's a pretty broad stroke there for what can be a quad 3 or quad 4 or win. And I think some of Texas Tech's are lower end, and look, everyone's got bad games. And I want to say this, I also think the Big 12 is hurt this year because generally you probably have one team who's like a quad three home, quad three road. Iowa State and Kansas State are so bad, they're quad three on if you beat them on the road and quad four if you beat them or lose to them at home. It's just not typical for the Big 12 to have two teams that are that bad. But for Texas Tech, looking at the resume, they've got the wins at Oklahoma, at Texas, at LSU, the season sweep of Oklahoma and Texas by knocking off Oklahoma, Texas at home as well. But they haven't beaten anybody else in the quad one or quad two, and they don't have a lot of quad two games, period. Looking at their resume, we all know Texas Tech is good, which the Chris Beard effect is a real thing. But realistically, what do you think about the resume they actually have?
This has been 2 years now where Texas Tech has benefited in the net from a lot of close losses to good teams. They haven't scheduled strong in the non-conference for the most part. They did play Houston this year, which Houston's a very good team. But they generally play those quad three, quad four games in the non-conference, and then a Big 12 schedule, which is awesome. Can't necessarily fault them for that, but we see them get propped up in net despite mediocre records is because they tend to play teams like Kansas, Baylor, West Virginia really well, but lose those games. And one of the things that factored into net is it's not totally baked in there, but margin of victory does play a role in skewing a lot of those metrics. And when you can play good teams close, you get rewarded for that. And Texas Tech doesn't win a lot of those games, but is really good at keeping them close, just with the style of play that they have. And that benefits them in these analytics. Where you get to the quad records and stuff is why we may see them falter below on a seed line where the net ranking would put them, because there is some eye test factors. There are, you know, the quadrant records that go into play here. But their net ranking is one that has been propped up both last year and this year because of the amount of, A, good teams that they play, and B, the fact that they were never really blown out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that also kind of jives with, you know, just the eye test. I think if anybody looking at a Texas Tech team says, yeah, that's a good team. I don't think they're a great team, but that's a good team. One that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want to play them on any particular day, especially if they, you know, happen to have that defense just suffocating the way that they have been known to do. I also think, though, that part of the, I mean, I know that this doesn't really come through in the metrics, because the metric is supposed to, you know, not really care about who the coach is. But I think that Chris Beard's kind of darling status lets people be okay with the fact that their net numbers are so high, the fact that they're ranked so high, that all their advanced metrics come in so high, even though when you really look at what they've done, it seems like they're being overrated. It seems like all of the formulas that are set up to try to, you know, evaluate how good teams are, you know, it overrates them, I think, in a lot of cases. And that they get that benefit of the doubt. Nobody really calls them out on it, because Chris Beard is, you know, one of the rising young stars in college basketball coaching. I mean, I agree. He's absolutely phenomenal at what he does. We'll see how well, now that people have kind of started to see what his system is and had an opportunity to adjust to it, how well that's going to work, like, in the long term. But I think at this point, that, like, part of the reason we don't hear more about Texas Tech and people are kind of just like, yeah, whatever, it looks fine to me, is because there's still that little bit of star factor for them going to the national title game, you know, and Chris Beard essentially being coronated as the, you know, the next up and coming coach.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong. Perception certainly plays a major role in it. When you're talking about evaluating teams, you're just judging them from in the selection committee room. And having as much success as he had so quickly plays a role. One thing that Texas Tech has done since Chris Beard took over is they're always in games late. Chris Beard's system, the way he coaches a game for first 35 minutes is to keep it close and at least give them a chance. First year they had Keenan Evans, and he would take over a game late, and they'd win a lot of those close games because of Keenan Evans. And then when they made that run in the national championship game, they'd get close. Jarrett Culver became that guy and made those plays. Last year they didn't have that guy, and it's why they lost a lot of those close games. And this year they have Mac McClung. They have made him that guy. Sometimes he can deliver, sometimes he can't. He has not been as automatic and reliable as Keenan Evans and Jarrett Culver were in those situations. And that's not a knock on McClung, because Evans was excellent in crunch time. Culver ended up being the number six pick in the draft. But the fact that they are in those games too helps in that perception, because they didn't have a game like Kansas had against Texas, where you watch the game and you're like, oh my goodness, Kansas stinks. And that's not necessarily the case on a larger standpoint. But if you're watching that game, you can be impacted by a team losing a game that they should be in by 20, by 30. Texas Tech hasn't had that time where they've been really curb stomped and blown out. And so that plays into it as well. Plus, Chris Beard is one of the best young coaches in the game. And when you don't have those huge blemishes, you don't get knocked out, but you keep getting some jabs in, it doesn't have the same impact from a perception standpoint.
So one resume that really shocked me, you know, you started to see West Virginia on the two line in a lot of mock brackets. They're at number 12 in the net right now. And I knew they were good. They're 17-6. And I think sometimes we just look at the record and go, okay, well, there's not that big of a difference between, say, them record wise and Kansas or some other teams in the Big 12. Oklahoma State's 16-6. Kansas is 18-8. You know, Oklahoma's 14-7. Then you go look at the net and you actually go look at their resume. West Virginia didn't have a quad four game until Big 12 play, and they beat Iowa State and Kansas State at home. Everything else on their resume is 1, 2, and 3. In fact, they are 11-6 in quad one and quad two. Now, here's why I'm always curious about how things are weighted. Kwatu is good, right? But, you know, winning on the road at TCU is considered a quad two win. And not everybody's won on the road at TCU. But it's weird to me. I know we weight road games differently, and they should be. I absolutely believe they should. But this is where I'm always curious about, like, how the quads are kind of handled. And why do I seem to hear so many people, and look, West Virginia is good. This is not a shot at West Virginia. This is more just a curiosity. Why do I seem to hear on other national podcasts one and two quads combined when there's a big difference between, say, beating Kansas at home and getting to go on the road to the team ranked 115th and winning there? Why are those grouped together?
The general thinking is that quad one and quad two is good games. You've beaten respectable teams, and quad three and four is not. The way I think of it is quad one is you beat a really good team, or, you know, a really good situation if you beat a team that's ranked 70th in net on the road. But those you consider your top tier wins, and you mostly hear about just quad one when it comes to the bubble, because you want to know, you know, the best wins, who they beat. And you can say, well, they have X number of quad one wins. When you talk about quads one and two, you lump them together. A lot of times, I'll point to the ACC this year because ACC has been down. There hasn't been a lot of quad one games for ACC teams, but there's a lot of quad two. And so if you are good in quad one and quad two, you can generally think of that as showing you have separated yourself from teams that may otherwise be on the bubble. Because you have, if you're 10-4 overall, again, and I'm just throwing out numbers here, but if you're 10-4 overall against quad one and quad two, while you might be 1-3 against quad one, your quad two record is enough to show that you have beaten tournament caliber teams with consistency.
I think also from what I've heard from several people, part of the thinking too is that there's often a very fine line between a team that is, you know, barely in quad one and a team that is barely just below them in quad two, that those are probably fairly comparable games. And if you're grouping quad one and quad two, which are consistently considered to be good, then that allows you to have like a larger sample size, essentially, so you can actually get more out of it. The other thing to think about, too, is that if we focused solely on quad one and talked about all those quad one wins, a lot of times the mid-major teams that are trying to compete for an at-large berth wouldn't have anywhere near enough data points to be able to say anything good about them or bad about them. And so you would essentially just kind of ignore them because they didn't have opportunities, which is largely out of their control. Or when they have those quad one opportunities, it's usually in the non-conference schedule where they are playing a team that is usually a whole lot better than them, because most of the time you're not going to bring in a mid-major team unless you're fairly certain that you can beat them. So it's one of those things that whether it actually has its effect or not, my understanding is that it was set up to allow a somewhat even playing field so that you could actually compare a reasonable, you know, comparable schedule between a good mid-major team and a, you know, decent high major team. Otherwise, you're probably going to be weighting even more towards Power Five teams than you do already.
To that point, too, the quad one cutoff for a home game is the team ranked 30th in net. So quad one for home games is team ranked 1-30 in net. Right now, at the time of this recording, Oklahoma is 29th. Oklahoma State is 33rd. So beating Oklahoma, as of right now, would get you more credit than beating Oklahoma State would, even though Oklahoma State is probably playing better basketball right now.
Yeah, I was gonna make the point. It's what's weird about the numbers. So for those that don't know, as Brian mentioned, 1-30 at home is a quad one. 1-75 on the road is quad one.
And isn't it like 1-50 on neutral?
On neutral,
yes, it's 1-50 and neutral. So what that means, if you want to use it from the Big 12 perspective, beating Oklahoma State on the road is a quad one win. Beating them home is quad two. But the weird example then for me is you look at TCU. Beating TCU on the road, because of what number they are, they're currently 115. So beating TCU on the road right now is a quad two win. Beating them at home is quad three. Which is kind of one of those weird things of like, you, when the way teams are talked about, does that mean TCU is a good team or no? Because if you think about a quad two win, like, that should still be a solid team. But I don't think of, you know, that's where I'm really, some of the numbers to me are,
yeah, but if,
like,
you,
I'm not saying
they
should break it down to a quad five, but, you know.
But if you think about it, a team that is okay, but not good. If you go into their, you know, their arena, you're much more likely to lose than if you were to face a good team at home and you've got a really good home court advantage. So like a team like, say, a Kansas or a Baylor, you know, playing a team like Oklahoma State at home is going to be, you know, I don't want to say it's going to be easy for them, but it's going to be, I think, probably on par with your normal team going into a place like TCU, where TCU is actually a decent team at home. They're probably not as good as, you know, what a lot of people would think, just kind of looking from the outside. But when you go on the road, especially in conference, it's a lot harder than it is to necessarily play a better team at home, because you're comfortable with the confines. And I mean, we've seen that a lot this year, even with, you know, road teams were doing really well at the beginning and it snapped back the other direction really, really fast. It seemed like home teams were getting more and more advantage as the rest of the season has gone on. And so I think it's definitely fair. Maybe you can, you know, quibble with how wide that gap is for what is considered a quad one or quad two on the road versus at home, but there definitely should be some sort of difference. Like beating a team at home could be theoretically a worse win than going on the road to a slightly less good team, but doing it at their place.
Yeah, all valid points. All valid. It's just really interesting to me. I agree,
though. Like the way that the system is set up right now, beating Oklahoma State at home is essentially comparable to beating TCU on the road, which I don't think, you know, just using the example that Brian already gave, that seems a little extreme to me in some cases, but I also don't know how you would, you know, redo the cutoffs to actually make that make sense. And, you know, part of the problem too is you couldn't really do it without having a full season worth of data. And then where do you make the cutoffs that don't just seem like being arbitrary so that you lump whatever teams you want in whatever spots?
Yeah. No. I get it. Brian, looking at the Big 12, looking at the resumes, because I've sent you the Google Sheet. Is there a resume, you know, we kind of talked about Texas Tech. Is there a resume for a team that might shock people is not as good as they might think, and vice versa?
I think Oklahoma is an interesting one because overall they have a fairly good resume, 5-5 in quad one games, but then drops to 1-1 in quad two and now 2-1 in quad three with a loss to Kansas State. They will get credit, obviously, for that stretch where they beat Kansas and then beat Texas and then beat Alabama. That's huge for them. But if you take that 1 week of really good play for them out of the equation, then suddenly to lump in multiple quadrants here, they are 5-7 against quads 1-3 outside of that week. And that's not good. It's not a resume like that is generally not indicative of a tournament team, but that week comes into play, makes everything look nice because it gives them 5 quad one wins, and you can't discount that. But I do think it's important when you are filling out your bracket to know that, because it's very possible, and it very much looks like right now that Oklahoma is a solid team, but got really hot for a week and are still reaping the benefits from that.
Yeah, you had an interesting article about Oklahoma that you put out on Heat Check this week, and we've shared it. We'll share it again here on Monday, that Oklahoma might not be a team that you should move too far down your bracket. What is your concern with Oklahoma at this point?
Well, backing it up to most of their similar resumes were teams that were upset in the first round with pretty decent seats. That doesn't bode well for them. They're just – what caused them to go on that run was their defense – was excellent. They went from mediocre defensive team to a above average to great defensive team over a 5-game stretch, which they won all 5 of those games, including that Kansas, Texas, Alabama streak. On the front side of that and on the back side of that streak, their defense has been just mediocre. And that's not good enough with the offense that they have. They have some good players who can score, Austin Reeves, Brady Manick, Devion Harmon, you throw in there, but they don't have the depth of secondary scoring that you need to only have a mediocre defense. Like, you can't be mediocre on both ends with something to rely on. And Oklahoma doesn't necessarily have that thing to rely on. They're good. They're feisty. They're tough, and they will make you work for a win. You can't just roll the ball out and assume you're going to beat Oklahoma. That's not going to happen. but they also their cap in terms of like their potential where they play at their best is not that high when their defense isn't playing at that above average to really, really good level. And since that streak, it hasn't been. It's gone back to being mediocre.
All right, let's wrap up on this, Brian. I kind of asked and we got off topic just talking about Oklahoma. Is there a resume that might surprise people in the Big 12 for a team that will probably be seeded higher than people realize right now?
You pointed it out earlier, West Virginia being on the two line and potentially being, depending on what happens in the Big 10, potentially being in the mix for a one. It doesn't seem like anybody wants that fourth number one seed. Ohio State keeps losing. Illinois is pretty much slated, general consensus right now, in that fourth number one spot. But they close the season this week with games against Michigan and Ohio State. And I would assume it was hurt. That could very well be an 0-2 week for them. Villanova just lost. And if all those teams continue moving down in that, the team that's sitting there is West Virginia. And West Virginia has gotten the bulk of their tough Big 12 schedule out of the way. And there is no such thing as an easy Big 12 schedule. They still play Baylor and they close at Oklahoma State. TCU is in the middle of that, though, and all three of those are at home. If they are to go 2-1 in that stretch, potentially, if they can, if Baylor hasn't turned things around, if they can pick up that victory, I think you're looking at a real scenario where West Virginia could sneak in and potentially get that fourth number one seed.
That's wild. I mean, we've seen brackets all year where, you know, Texas was on the one line for a little bit, and they've kind of fallen off. West Virginia's right there. It would be interesting to see another team, Big 12 team, get on the one line. As much talk as there's been about the Big 10, because Gonzaga's there. You feel like unless Baylor goes on a real losing streak, and I don't think losing to Kansas and West Virginia coming off of COVID is a real losing streak, but you know, it would take a lot for them to fall off the one line. You feel like Michigan's that third team, and I do think that fourth one is up for grads. The other one I wanted to just to kind of bring up with you, since you didn't mention it, I thought you might, was Kansas. Because I keep seeing a lot of conversations nationally about the Blue Bloods, and they keep lumping Kansas in with the North Carolina and the Duke and the Michigan State and all these other teams that are having, or Kentucky, they're having really rough seasons. And I'm like, wait a second. Kansas is playing their best basketball of the season right now. Their resume is a good one. They're all the way up to, I don't have their net right. They're up to the way up to 11 in the net. Kansas feels like a team that's also kind of rising. And if this trend for them continues, because again, they're done with conference play. They're going to add a game against UTEP just to keep fresh. They got the Big 12 tournament. How high? I feel like Kansas is going to be higher than people think that they were going to be when they get announced on Selection Sunday.
There's a real possibility they're sitting out on the three line, and I think that's probably the floor for them. There's a chance they could get up to the two, depending on what happens elsewhere, but I think they're pretty solidly on the three line. There was a point where I think it was legitimate for them. They were never on the same level as Michigan State or Duke and Kentucky from a struggle standpoint, but when they had lost 4 or 5, I think it was, maybe it was 5 or 7, they were struggling and didn't look like a good team and weren't ranked. And in relation to normal Kansas standards, that was good. It wasn't good. And I think a lot of people were talking about it in comparison to this Kansas team versus the Kansas standard, as opposed to, you know, what's generally good for any team. Because I don't think there was a point where they were in danger of missing the NCAA tournament. But since they went on a 3-game losing streak in January, David McCormack has become the focal point of their offense. They've made it a point to go in inside of him and play more through him offensively, and he's stepped up in a huge way. And the Baylor game this past weekend was just, I think, the exclamation point on that. His minutes per game is up, his usage is up, his averages are up, obviously, with more minutes, but his efficiency is up, and his percentages are up. So not only is he getting more involved, he's becoming more efficient and effective with his touches. And that's been important for Kansas, because the big thing that they struggled with, or one of the big things they struggled with, was the lack of a go-to option offensively. Jalen Wilson was a guy for a little bit. Abaji was a guy for a little bit. Marcus Garrett could be, but never really was.
Not offensively, at least.
Not offensively, exactly. I think they needed him to be or wanted him to be, but he wasn't that guy. And McCormack isn't the guy who you're going to throw the ball down into and he's going to get you 30. He can, but that's not reliable. But he has become a reliable 17-8 without really thinking. And that has done wonders for this Kansas team. They still have the 8 quad one losses, which is a lot, but they don't have any losses outside of quad one. Because of that, the no bad losses point and the 6 quad one wins, I think they're sitting pretty solidly at a 3. Could potentially get to the 2 again, depending on what else happens, but I think Kansas should be looking at a 3 seed.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they run to a Big 12 tournament title, like, they have a shot at the 2 as long as, you know, a team like Villanova doesn't go crazy, or a team like, I don't know, like, well, I'm trying to think of some of these other 3 seeds, you know, that could potentially, like, keep them out, but, like, you know, a team like Houston, if they slip up, they're going to fall off the 3 and, you know, contention for a 2. You know, Alabama has some opportunities to kind of slip here and there. Villanova, they're going to have to bounce back really fast, or they're going to fall off the 2 line. And, like, if Kansas, or if West Virginia doesn't beat Baylor this week, you know, to finish out their Big 12 schedule, and then Kansas beats them on, you know, en route to a Big 12 title, there's a very good chance that Kansas would be the team that would jump up and snag that last number 2 spot. Obviously, that's a lot of what ifs, but, you know, kind of what you're talking about with McCormack really kind of coming on for them. I actually talked about this in our podcast last week. You know, looking at what he's done in conference, that is on par with Thomas Robinson's All-American season when he was at Kansas. So, like, it's one of those things. It's a completely different performance from him compared to what we were seeing early in the year. And that has been one of the big keys to their turnaround. You know, also, I just think that the entire defense has gotten a whole lot better. You know, Bryce Thompson has kind of changed the way that defense runs. And Marcus Garrett, you know, for all of his issues offensively, he is, I think, again this year, probably the best lockdown defender in the nation at this point. There's a couple guys you could have an argument with about it. But if you talk about one player just being able to completely eliminate one opponent, he did that to Jared Butler in that game on Saturday against Baylor. It was absolutely phenomenal. Like, there was a lot of talk about Baylor not, you know, looking off and just, like, coming back from COVID, and it was clear that they weren't, you know, the team that everyone thought they were. But I honestly think that had a lot more to do with the way that Kansas just completely suffocated them defensively, and that's not going to get talked about because right now, you know, the whole COVID narrative is going to be a convenient one, I think, for a lot of people to talk about with this Baylor team.
Yeah, I do think there was a little bit of both. You know, Kansas certainly right. has been much better and played much better, but Baylor also was not on their A game. It's one of those things where, you know, it's either A or B. It can't be both. This is one of those scenarios where I think a little bit of both.
No, right. And to be fair, like in my prediction that I actually had before the game, I actually had said that because of, you know, it takes a little bit of time to get back to full strength from COVID, that Baylor isn't going to have their A game, but this Kansas team is playing much better defensively and is going to completely lock them down and not give them a chance to get better in this game and get back to what they normally do. And that's basically exactly what happened in that game. So it's one of those things. This was completely foreseeable. You know, Kansas really needed this to kind of boost their, you know, their stock to be able to try to get that 2 seed but at least assure a number 3 seed for them. And they were able to do just that.
Brian, as always, it is an absolute pleasure to have you here on the 1012 podcast. Everybody, do yourselves a favor as well. Go give Brian a follow on Twitter. It's at BRAUF, B-R-A-U-F, 33. Give Heat Check College Basketball. It's at Heat Check CBB on Twitter as well. They do brackets. They do bubbles. They do power rankings. They do fantastic work covering college basketball. There's a reason we have Brian on here all the time. And it's not just because he's one of the only ones who actually respond to me. Kidding. Brian is fantastic. We will share that great OU article. It's well done. I don't know that it's great for Oklahoma fans, but it's a good read. Brian, man, as always, thank you so much. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, we are going to get to our weekly power rankings and less miles and more after this quick break.
The Highball Network is your new home for podcasts that meet you at the intersection of sports and entertainment. Featuring personalities like Christine Butterfield, Madison Morris, Randy Heitz, and Ryan Chapman, the Highball Network will keep you entertained while delivering high-level analysis across the entire spectrum of sports. The Winning Women podcast preaches female empowerment and covers stories of perseverance and breakthroughs for women in sports. Sideline Warning delivers fast-paced commentary on sports all across the national landscape, complete with plenty of roasts. And for you Sooner fans out there, the Heisman Park Rangers covers the entirety of OU athletics, from football to softball and everything in between. Like the Highball Network on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Highball Network to stay up to date on all our latest projects. You can find Highball Network podcasts on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Okay. Thanks again to Brian. That was awesome. Always appreciate him joining us here on the 1012 podcast. It is time for our weekly rankings. Who is our, and I say weekly rankings, it's our team of the week. We have teams of the week. Men's and women's hoops. We have each picked out a men's team and a women's team to congratulate for the success they've had this week. Jamie, since we have not heard from you in a while, and that's not a problem, that's okay. I know you've had a rough week covering about 1,000 things and being very emotional, getting to watch your brother at senior day, which was awesome. Congrats. Well, it's just before we, how was that? How was that experience?
I mean, it was incredible. Like, I'm going to start crying again right now. I mean, so for context, I don't really talk about it as much on here, but my brother is technically a redshirt junior, but academically he is a senior and graduating from Iowa State. He's walked on to the men's team for the last 3 years. Obviously this season's been tough. But the guys there are awesome guys. For a kid who was born in Ames, who grew up wearing Cyclone clothes probably 95% of his life, to be able to not only be on that team, but Coach Prohm started him for senior night, and I'm like getting emotional again, like very clearly, but it was incredible. I love my brother. Like, he's a great person. And so for him to get that was incredible. Me, both my parents, my fiance were all there to see it. And so obviously an extremely limited crowd in Hilton, but the people who were there, the tickets that were open sold out. And so for people to still come out after the struggles they've had this year, and support that senior class was incredible. Another incredibly hard fought game, right there. Couldn't get it done, but gosh, they really tried their hardest. And yeah, it was extremely meaningful for my family and just, I mean, it's really cool, and I really appreciate it a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is a really neat thing for you and for your family and for your brother. Him getting the start that's really special. I mean that, like, that's a really cool thing. So Jamie, why don't you kick us off? Who's your men's team of the week this week?
My men's team of the week would have to be Oklahoma State. I mean, you go out there and you win a couple overtime games, I'm going to call you probably my team of the week. I mean, Kate Cunningham's performance on Saturday was nothing short of incredible. I had to leave the house as overtime started. So of course I was following along and later got to see like the highlights, and it was amazing. So yeah, definitely has to be Oklahoma State for me.
Andy, do you concur?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to disagree on that one. They have two ranked wins in the week. You know, one of those on the road, two phenomenal overtime games. I mean, as much as I want to give it to Kansas for beating Baylor, giving Baylor their first loss of the season and only loss of the season to this point, I kind of saw that one coming. It wasn't as much of a shock as I think some people might have thought it was. And as impressive as what Kansas did, the fact that Oklahoma State was able to do that and, you know, basically punch their ticket to the NCAA tournament with both of those wins. Like at this point, it's hard to imagine Oklahoma State not being in the NCAA tournament at this point, even if they were to lose out from here on out. And so like, this was a huge week for them, two huge ranked wins for them. You know, that first win in Bedlam with the opportunity to go ahead and get the sweep coming up tonight from when this episode's airing. So, you know, it's absolutely phenomenal for them, and they have an opportunity to follow it up with some really big wins going into next week as well.
I mean, look, Bedlam's a big deal, and for Cade to be able to cement his legacy in the rivalry, dropping 40 and 11 rebounds, shooting over 50%, 13 of 14 from the line. I mean, people keep bringing up the Trae Young game, and that's great. Trae Young lost his 48 point on like 39 shot game. Like Cade won. This was a huge night. Yes, I'm digging it at Trae a little bit. This was a huge night. It was amazing. They've got to do it again Monday, which is just nuts. And I thought the home teams might win. Now I guess the road teams are going to win. So we'll see what happens. You guys are both going OSU. So I'm going to do what I thought Andy might, because I do think even with them coming off the COVID pause, and it was a long COVID pause, and according to what Jeff Goodman had to say to David Smoke of Stick'em 365, Baylor's three-week pause, they had 8 players who tested positive. We thought it was a combination of COVID and injury, but they had 8 players test positive. As we know, it's not something you, especially if you deal with the real symptoms, it's not something you bounce back from quickly. So I understand Baylor is dealing with a lot, and I get it. But it's still a big win, and no one else has beaten Baylor this season. So for Kansas to do it is a huge deal. And I don't want to fault Kansas too much for the loss to Texas earlier in the week. I mean, Texas is up and down, but they needed that win. It was a loss in overtime in Austin. This is a good Texas team. It's a talented Texas team. It was a hard-fought game. I know Texas came back. I'm not going to fault Kansas too much for losing by 3 in overtime in Austin. I will go with Kansas because they've done what no one else has been able to do up to this point, and that's knock off Baylor. And I'll be right now. I was going to say Baylor if Baylor won that game, because if they had been able to go 2-0 coming off of a 3-week COVID break, that would have been incredibly impressive. But it's not just that Kansas beat them. It's not like they just eked one out. Kansas beat Baylor on Saturday. It wasn't just impressive because they got the win. It was an impressive win. And I think Brian's point on Kansas it's kind of the culmination of this run that they've been on. It was a real win. It was a good win. And I will take Kansas for my team of the week because of it.
Yeah, I mean, also, you know, kind of to talk about why that Texas loss shouldn't really be held against them too much, you know. They were basically an inch away from sending it to double overtime. If, you know, Jalen Wilson hadn't like lost the ball on his way up for an easy lay-in, they would be going, you know, if Kansas had actually taken that 3-point shot that they had set up at the end of regulation, they might have won it in regulation. Like, that was as much of a back and forth. The only thing that shocked me about that game was the shot of the sideline with Shaka actually having hair. Like, I had not seen him yet with that hairdo. It like, oh my gosh, that was like the most shocking thing that I have seen in a long time on any kind of sports television.
He's got to keep that hair. He can't get rid of it now.
Well, I would say his wife and daughter both said that he looks better with it, so I don't think he has a choice. You know, as I found out with my own beard, like, if the wife likes it, you don't get rid of it.
That's accurate. That is correct. So for you single fellas, it stays or goes if they like it or don't. Just get over it. All right, Jamie, since you let us off with the men, who is your women's team of the week this week?
My women's team of the week is honestly equally as easy as far as I'm concerned. Oklahoma is putting together just a tear for themselves, pushing for the NCAA tournament. Middling to bottom of the Big 12 TCU team, and then beat Texas in overtime at Texas. And frankly, with 3 postponed games still to play, they have a really good chance to win all 3 of the games they have remaining as well. So Oklahoma's doing everything they need to extend their season as long as possible. And I mean, they're playing great basketball with an extremely short bench.
Andy, who's your pick here?
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought that we were going to have the exact same pick again, but I'm actually going to go with Baylor, wrapping up the season conference title. I mean, they've been fairly impressive recently. And so, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it is Baylor. They were kind of expected coming into the season to be winning the conference title, but to be able to follow that up, especially with, you know, some of the things they had happen in the middle of the season, it was extremely impressive. They've had some impressive wins along the way, and it's not like, you know, they played, you know, slouch teams this week as well. They put an absolute pasting on Kansas State on Saturday to wrap it up at that point, winning 85-49. So that was super impressive. you know, and then the win that they had against Oklahoma State earlier in the week, I thought was fairly impressive as well, winning that one by almost 20. So, I, you know, while you're expecting them to probably win those games, I think they won them impressively, and to wrap up the conference season title, I thought was enough to give them team of the week for me.
You know, on Baylor, Jamie, we've talked about this all year. Like, it felt like it was going to be a down year for Baylor. It didn't feel like they were going to, it's not that they weren't going to be good, but they weren't going to be what we expected from this Baylor team. And they still went 14-1 in conference play, and the only loss, and not a shot at Iowa State, but the only loss was them coming off of a COVID break as well to a good Iowa State team. But still, that was their only loss. They went 19-2 overall. Like, it's very impressive that dealing with COVID, not being themselves, and this being the top half of the Big 12 being good this year, they were still able to go 14-1 in conference play.
It is an impressive job by
Mulkey.
Yeah, I mean, Baylor figures out a way to do it. The game I'm most looking forward to end the season off, because obviously just like the men's side, the women have several games left that were rescheduled. But Baylor on Monday night, Baylor and Texas face off again. And I swore to high heaven that that was going to be a heck of a game the first time. And it was not. Texas was not good. I don't know what to expect now, because I don't know if that was a one-off thing or if Baylor just has Texas's number. But if Baylor can pull out another thumping at Texas, they're going to be looking in pretty primed shape for another deep postseason run. And I mean, obviously either way, that's kind of how they're looking right now. But that's really their last really major challenge, I think, just as far as the matchups go and things like that. And then they do still have West Virginia at home as the last game of the season. Baylor's done a great job and obviously has really pushed through a lot of adversity this year. So got at least a share of the Big 12 title, and I don't think it's going to come to that.
I mean, I the only way they don't games. Win out,
they have to.
Oh, they have to lose their last three in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's just put it this way: they have Kansas on the schedule. They're not going to share it.
Kansas is better than their record.
No, right. They've played a lot of close games, but if you can't finish it off against some of the other teams in the conference, you're not going to do it against Baylor.
No.
Right. Right.
By the way, I agree with Jamie. I will also go with Oklahoma as my women's team of the week. The Sooners, they're 4-1 in their last five, 6-3 in their last nine. These last three wins or four wins include beating Iowa State, top half of the conference, winning at West Virginia, winning at Texas. I mean, those are three of the teams in the top half of the conference. Those are three of the good teams in the Big 12 this year. I mean, they're on a bit of a roll. They're 7-8 in conference now, 10-10. I don't think they've got TCU and Kansas State at home left. And both of those, the way they're playing, you would think would both be wins. I don't know that they have enough left to make the NCAA tournament, barring a run in through the Big 12 tournament. But it is an impressive into the season, and it is impressive to see this team not to have completely caved when, you know, after their almost 30-point loss at OSU just a few weeks ago. I mean, they got beat by Texas, got crushed by OSU, and then they started this run. Like, it is impressive for this team to have not given up and continued to fight and have been rewarded for it.
Yeah, I think if they get to the Big 12 final, that would be enough, that they could get in as an at-large at that point. But I do agree, like, to feel safe into the field, they probably need one more big win, which is going to require them to get to the Big 12 final, I think.
Yeah. There's
still an opportunity for them to make it on the bubble if they get to the semifinals and lose that game, you know, and it's a close game and some other things break their way with other conferences. But to feel really safe about getting in with what they had at the beginning of the season, I think they need to get at least one more big win, and that the only opportunity they're going to have is in that semifinal, I think.
Well, the argument would be if they finish where they are, they're the sixth seed. And so their first game would be against the three seed, who is going to either end up being West Virginia or Oklahoma State. So they're going to get an opportunity for a good win right out the bat in the Big 12 title. So really, your argument of if they make it to the final, they would get, that would mean two more
really
quality wins on their resume. So it would be a more impressive, they would have more quality wins. Now, I think that's a tough spot to be in there out of the gate facing West Virginia or OSU. Now, granted, they've beaten West Virginia on the road. They didn't beat Oklahoma State this season. So, you know, it's not like either one of those is going to be an easy opportunity, but the opportunities will be there unless they, you know, lose these last two. They should finish as the sixth seed. They're currently two games ahead of Texas Tech ahead of that seventh seed there. So, you know, just something to think about. It's interesting all these leftover games we have for this week. All right, I know we're supposed to talk about Les Miles, Andy. I know you don't really want to, but I don't know. We're hitting the point in the episode where I kind of have to go, do we have the time to do this right? I'm not sure we do.
I mean, I'm just going to say, I don't know at this point how much there actually is to talk about. So it might be better to wait until maybe there's even some more information. Because, yes.
See what shakes out.
I mean, there was, you know, what we know at this point. Let me just sum it up real quick. There was supposedly a settlement for something related to some sort of sexual harassment or maybe some inappropriate comments or something. We don't really know what the details of that are, other than that there was a settlement, that there's some questions about how that, you know, made its information up to LSU and what they did about it. But at this point, we really don't know. There's not enough, I think, at this point for anybody at Kansas to make any kind of comments on it, to do anything about it at this point. So until more information comes out, I don't know that there's really anything to talk about other than to acknowledge the fact that, hey, there's something here that is going to need to be discussed at some point, but we kind of have to know a little bit more about what's there before we can really talk about it.
That's fair. I think my big thing, you know, the conversation is, as soon as the information came out, the story came out, you started seeing people like, he's got to go, he's got to go, is he going to go, da da da, they should move on. Which leads me to, this is going to come down to the relationship with Jeff Long, and I've seen the, you should get rid of both of them. And I would be happy to have that conversation, but again, I don't want to spend 20 minutes on this. I can answer that in one word, yes. But you have to ask the question of, did Jeff Long know about this coming into it? Because if he didn't, then there's potential grounds for him, you know, similar to what happened at Arkansas, Petrino, kind of being lied to or misled, or using this as an opportunity to get rid of somebody. If he did, I mean, it's just public knowledge, and he already knew, so I don't think that would necessarily change anything for him as far as his relationship with Les Miles. Now, does that change anything with the relationship with the university? I don't know. I agree. It's one of those things we need to wait for more information. I would just get my opinion out now that not that a coaching change again is in the best interest of Kansas, but maybe another overall change in the direction of the Kansas Athletic Department wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
But here's really what it comes down. Like, if we want to talk about Jeff Long, I'm definitely willing to have that conversation at some point, because to be honest, this isn't the thing that should be his ouster if he does get ousted. But it definitely, you know, doesn't necessarily help. But if we're talking about this with Les Miles, like, I'm not convinced with the details that have come out. I'm not convinced that we're actually at the point where they have to do something in terms of getting rid of him or anything like that. Because if the only thing that happened is what the details that we actually do have, okay, that he maybe made an inappropriate comment to somebody, that they had some outside conversations about it and decided to settle on something so that there was no further action, and that's it, and that what LSU found didn't rise to him needing to be punished. Like, at face value, I don't know that that means that Kansas needs to do anything other than people saying that we don't want, you know, anyone has even the hint of anything like this in their past at all, you know, coaching at Kansas. And I don't know that the Kansas program is in a position to be, you know, telling everybody or anybody, you know, at this point that something that you've done like that is, you know, us not wanting you at the school anymore. Like, right now, the way that it is, unless he did something egregious, Kansas can't afford to move on from him at this point, because recruiting's at the best spot that it's been in a really long time. You know, the path forward right now for them is as clear, I think, as it has been in a decade. So, like, this is a point where it's going to take something substantial showing that he actually did something wrong for them to be willing to move on at this point. And honestly, I can't blame them for that. I can't even say that that's the wrong decision if that's what ultimately comes out.
Fair enough. I think that wraps that up, and we'll just if more information comes out, we'll talk about it again. Wrap up on two notes. Number one, found this stat. It's really interesting. In relation to Cade Cunningham and the performance he had on Saturday for Oklahoma State, he finished with 14 points and 11 rebounds in their win at number seven at the time, Oklahoma. He's the first player with at least 40 points and 10 rebounds against an AP top 10 opponent since Steve Novak at Marquette did it on January 3rd, 2006 against number two, Connecticut. That's been a minute. 2006 is a lot longer ago than you realize. And, I mean, if you're going to put somebody in the class with Steve Novak, that's not a bad, Not a bad house to be living in. You guys have any other thoughts before we go?
Nope, I'm good.
Jamie?
I hope that everyone on Twitter is really good about updating the Twitterverse on basketball games this week, because I will be living in Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines for the girls' state basketball tournament that I'm broadcasting. So hopefully I'll be able to catch all of the good Big 12 action on top of that.
Oh, Philip, I'm sorry. I did think of one thing. I did notice how you were able to kind of skirt out of talking about yours and Jamie's FCS teams and how they did this week. But
Hold on a second.
Wait, didn't mine win?
Oh, we missed our home field plug. I am a terrible person. How did we save it till now? That should have been right after Brian. I can't believe we just did this.
Mine won by 20.
Oh, really? Okay. I just remember.
They came back in the second half because remember what happened last time? One of my teams threw three picks in the first half. So hey, what I'm saying is.
So first of all, I did not follow through with the rest of it. I just saw the update that Philip gave us at halftime, essentially. I also, though, very easily could have just been saying that Philip didn't want to acknowledge that your team did really well while his did not do so well. So
North Dakota State lost for the first time in, like, was it like a decade or something? I don't know.
To be fair, their probable first-round quarterback is not playing because he's getting ready for the NFL draft. So
correct.
Them taking a step back is not outside the realm of like what was expected, but no. Yeah, it still is not so great.
So yeah. So North Dakota, obviously, for those, if you're tuning in, for those, North Dakota State, James Madison, and for Andy, Delaware, who's not started playing yet, are all FCS teams playing spring football. But what they have most in common, besides being our teams, is that they all have amazing, super comfortable, super cool, vintage sports apparel on Homefield Apparel, who makes, I will repeat that for you so that you understand, incredibly comfortable t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, and joggers. Well-researched, awesomely designed, vintage logo, college sports apparel. If you haven't been to Homefield Apparel yet, this must be the first time you've been listening to the show, because I don't know how you've just still been like, I refuse to go. You must be my 2-year-old who now has decided that the word no is her favorite word, which just means for everything. Yes.
The other option is, you know, people that just knew that if they went, they were going to spend like $3,000 worth of, you know, or get like $3,000 worth of gear and just could not afford to do that because they had to, you know, like make a house payment or something. So I would accept that as an acceptable excuse for not going to Homefield Apparel yet at this point. Sure. But if it's not that, then what the hell have you been doing?
Because with
home
brands
field
like
gives you home field magic,
Homefield like, magic is a real stinking thing. So
just ask James Madison.
Yes, just ask James Madison and every other team that was part of the big news Saturday this past fall. So go to Homefield Apparel for your first time. Find a few things. Maybe you, whether you're a fan of the team or not, trust me, you will find things you like. Maybe for Butler, BYU, or Western Kentucky, or Davidson, or Delaware,
perhaps,
which I can't say enough.
Iowa State, and Baylor.
Or Zot.
Zot?
Okay, look. My cart that I have right now has a Zot shirt in it. It has the Marching Zai shirt in it. It has a BYU shirt in it. It has my Delaware Blue Hen shirt. And then I got my wife a Temple Owl shirt as well. So I've got 5 things getting ready to make their way to me. Because I am one of those people that knew that once I started buying stuff from Homefield, I wasn't going to be able to stop. So yeah. I think I have a problem, but it's a good problem to have.
My card has Memphis, North Dakota State, and Indiana. So go to Homefield Apparel for your first time. And when it's your first purchase, use the promo code 1012, T-E-N-1-2, get 20% off that first order. which if you're going to spend that much money, you might as well save 20% off your order. And if you're going to spend that much money, which means you're spending more than $70, all orders 70 or more get free shipping. So now is the perfect time to get Memphis, Maryland, Delaware, Baylor, Iowa State, Army, Syracuse, Temple, Pitt, Northern Kentucky, Hope College. Yes, Hawaii. Trust me, the Hawaii stuff. Just go look at the Hawaii stuff. Like, you will be glad you did.
That so Maryland turtle is fierce, too. My wife and I were looking at that one. We almost added that to the cart, too, because that turtle is amazing.
It is. It's an amazing turtle.
Sorry. That terrapin is amazing.
It's a turtle. Homefieldapparel.com. Promo code 1012, 20% off your first order. You'll be rocking some awesome Homefield Apparel gear as soon as it arrives. Like, the day of, you rip open the bag, you're going to be putting it on and wearing it like you're going to. We're going to have some stuff from Homefield potentially to give away when we do our bracket challenge, when the brackets come out. We'll talk about that again some more as we get closer to that. We're just a couple weeks away. One last note before we get out of here. Softball season, baseball season still underway. Congrats to West Virginia for a ninth inning, big come from behind win on Sunday. Very impressive. Loving college baseball. I wish there were more games actually able to watch ESPN Plus. What's the point of the Big 12 signing the contract with you if you're not going to make sure that more games are available? Softball. Oakland. We knew the Sooners were going to be good. They're number two in the country. And no, they haven't played a team that you're just like, yeah, that team's good. Not yet. Okay, they will. But not yet. But if you're going to play bad teams and you're going to be really good, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to dominate those teams, right? You're supposed to just completely grind them into submission. Oklahoma, to this point in the season, is 12-0 and has outscored their opponents 154-16. I shit you not. They opened with a 29-0 win. They also beat UTEP in that same weekend, 21-2. This past weekend, on Friday, they played New Mexico and won 33-4. I think the lady... Well, no. I think the Sooners are good. I almost did it. You almost did it.
God. After last week? Oh my gosh, you almost did it. That would have been amazing if I had followed through with it.
Yeah, you know, no. I will always catch myself.
Not a good amazing.
You know, you get trained by things that people do all the time, and it's like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to... No, it's not what you're supposed to say. The Sooners are amazing. They're awesome. They're number two in the country for a reason. It's ridiculous, and I cannot wait for Big 12 play. You know they open at Iowa State, Jamie, who's having a very
yes,
nice
I
season.
Do. Believe me, I know. Iowa State has a couple of really, really, really tough home games to start the season because they. I mean, obviously, Iowa, the state, does not get to play outdoor sports at this time of the year. So give it a couple weeks. But yes, I am very much looking forward to it. I'm hoping I get to go out and see it.
Iowa State 13-2 so far. Congrats to the Cyclones. It's very nice. Had a nice 4-1 weekend. So very good. Very good. Big 12 is good. Texas, Oklahoma, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, Baylor. They're all good. That's
mm-hmm. And Kansas is back over 500 now after starting 1-3 for the year. So things are looking up for
getting
them
better.
As well.
All in the up and up. All right. We'll be back on Thursday with the. I'm not going to tell you because, again, when I tell you who guests are, I am thrilled for Thursday's episode. That's all I'm going to say. We're supposed to record it today. I'm thrilled for Thursday's episode. I think you guys are really going to like it. We are talking football. So make sure you are subscribed to the show so you don't miss any of our episodes. We go up every Monday and Thursday at 6 a.m. If you want to know more about when those episodes come up or more about those kinds of things, follow us on Twitter at 1012 Podcast, T and the number 12, the word podcast. Follow us on Instagram at 1012 Pod, where we post exclusive content, and I will respond to DMs on both platforms. So feel free to DM us. Leave us a rating and review, especially if you're on iTunes. It helps the show out. And if you are a longtime listener and you are a longtime subscriber, please leave us a rating. We would love to. DM us. Hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on Instagram. We're happy to chat, happy to talk, happy to tell you why we said something mean about your team if we did. If you just want to rip on Andy, that's also okay. Be nice to Jamie. She's got a really busy week ahead. So we will see you. Oh, sorry. You know, this is, yeah. Make sure and give Andy a follow on Twitter at AndyMitts12. That's M-I-T-T-S. Make sure and follow Jamie as well at JSteyz, J-S-T-E-Y-Z. Follow us, subscribe, rate, review, go to Homefield, use 1012, and we will talk to you guys again on Thursday.